The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why these last few weeks of my radio program have been so focused on the country of Israel. Well, my friend, that's because the historical revision about Israel is so vast that for the most part, you have only been hearing one side from everybody else, well, practically everybody else. These past few weeks, I have been sharing the other side, a side you seldom, if ever, hear. A side which, incidentally, is based on the historical truth, not a lot of politically correct claptrap or lies from so-called peaceful Muslim clerics who claim to be about democracy all the while preaching Sharia law, which has nothing to do with democracy. Today, I conclude my series about Israel. We skipped it last week and ran a repeat broadcast on another subject instead because, interestingly enough, last Sunday I was not in the studio but was actually in Israel. I just got back from an amazing week and had an amazing time. I was joined by my amazing, beautiful wife, Dana, who will join us today in the second half of the program, sharing her own experiences in Israel. But first, let's wrap up our series. Now, if you missed any of these, we're doing part six today, final part. Parts one through five are posted on my website. But I want to continue now talking about the new anti-Semitism going on in America, on our college campuses and other places. And anti-Semitism disguised as anti-Zionism. Again, the Zionist is merely one who believes Jews are entitled to live in their own national homeland. Some people will say, oh, well, I'm anti-Zionist, but I'm not anti-Semitic. And as I mentioned last time, people like Martin Luther King were on record as saying, if you're one, you usually are the other. David Lloyd, professor of English at the University of California, Riverside, put together a campus event featuring Omar Barkoti, who has accused Israeli soldiers of, in his words, hunting children, and accused American Jews and other Israeli sympathizers of both controlling the media and, in his words, buying and paying for the allegiance of Congress. Lloyd offered course credit to any of his students who attended Barghouti's speech. Not that anti-Israeli sentiment in America has been limited to our college campuses. In 2009, 200 pro-Palestinian demonstrators stood in front of a courthouse in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, facing a smaller group of pro-Israeli supporters. The organized event was a response to Israel's invasion of the Gaza Strip. Now, that's land that Israel had given back to the Palestinians as part of a peace treaty, land that was now being used as a headquarters for continued terrorist attacks against Israel, including daily missile bombardment. One of the signs in front of the courthouse said, "Nuke Israel," but that was nothing compared to the words of a woman who shouted at the Jews in the crowd, "Go back to the oven. You need a bigger oven." Ovens, of course, were used by the Nazis to exterminate live Jewish babies in concentration camps when the Allies were approaching toward the end of the war and the SS was in a hurry to cover up its crimes. Emmanuel Lopez, who helped sponsor the Fort Lauderdale event, responded to the troubled chant. Well, what choice did he have? The event was sponsored by ANSWER. ANSWER stands for Act Now to Stop War and Racism. Well, it probably occurred to Lopez that anyone calling for the extermination of an entire people was not the most credible face for an organization that wants to end racism. While admitting that some anti-Semites had found their way into his group, Lopez explained she does not represent the opinions of the vast majority of people who were there. Well, perhaps not, but Lopez then went on to say that Zionism in general is a barbaric, racist movement that really is the cause of the situation in the Middle East. Wow. With disclaimers like that, who needs affirmation? Of course, in the Middle East itself, Palestinians do not merely call for the death of Jews, they contribute toward the cause. On June 8, 2016, not very long ago, two Palestinian terrorists gunned down 9 Israelis in Sarona Market, Tel Aviv. 4 people were killed, 5 injured. On June 30th of the same year, Hallel Yaffa, a 13-year-old girl, was knifed to death in her bed by 19-year-old Mohammed Tarahi, a Palestinian who had busted into her home. He was from a village nearby. He climbed a fence and locked himself inside, awaiting her arrival. Now, the Palestinian Authority has promised to reward any family whose children suffered martyrdom at the hands of the Israelis after committing a terrorist attack. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said on Palestinian television, "We welcome every drop of blood spilled in Jerusalem. This is pure blood, clean blood, blood on its way to Allah. With the help of Allah, every martyr will be in heaven and every wounded will get his reward." Now, there is not enough time to list every Palestinian terrorist atrocity waged against innocent Israelis. The deaths number in the thousands. But this next one I'm going to share with you is important due to the response of the world. On March 13th, 2011, a 12-year-old Israeli girl living in the West Bank settlement of Itmar returned home from a youth event only to walk into unparalleled horror. Unparalleled horror. She discovered 5 members of her family had been ruthlessly murdered in their sleep, including 3 children, 1 an infant. Police immediately suspected the crime was committed by Palestinian militants, and it seemed many Palestinians had little trouble with that possibility. Gaza residents from the southern city of Rafah responded to the news by celebrating. By celebrating. Candy was actually handed out on the streets. One resident said that the joy is a natural response to the harm settlers inflict on the Palestinian residents in the West Bank. Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad said he clearly and firmly denounces the terror attack. Oh, of course he does. But then he went on to carefully add, "Just as I have denounced crimes against Palestinians." Yes, that moral equivalency is always so helpful. Response from the mainstream media has also left much to be desired. Many news outlets downplayed the story. Can you imagine what the response would be had this happened to a Palestinian family? Undoubtedly, it would make headlines all over the world for 2 months. Of course, this does not mean the incident has been outright ignored. The APA reported on the event in a manner that blurred hard news with a rich, ripe editorial. They wrote, "Israel responded defiantly Sunday to a bloody Palestinian assault against West Bank settlers by approving construction of new settlement housing, retaliating for the stabbing deaths of a father, mother, and 3 small children with a measure that infuriated Palestinians and together with the attack threw already shaky peace efforts into a tailspin." So the problem is Israel retaliating against the murder of a little baby and others in the family because that thwarts the peace process, you think? Now, Melanie Phillips of The Spectator in Great Britain complained about this kind of reporting, especially since the APA piece was carried by the New York Times as well. Unfortunately, Phillips' complaint got her into trouble. She's in trouble now, said Phillips. "And as anticipated, the moral depravity of the Arabs is finding a grotesque echo in the moral bankruptcy and worse of the British and American liberal media, a sickening form of armchair barbarism." She also wrote, "The relatives of the massacre victims have made them publicly available in order to show the world the full horror of the Arab barbarism." Well, the lightning words, of course, were moral depravity of the Arabs. And yikes, she said, Arab barbarism. So what happened? A complaint was filed with Press Complaints Commission and the Bedfordshire Police by a group called Muslims for UK. Imia Bangalwala, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, and as usual, I don't care, but I'll take another stab. Imia Bangalwala, chairman of Muslims for UK, said her words went far beyond just denouncing the killings. It was a far more generalized racist outburst against Arabs as a whole. If you insert the word Jew or Jewish where she has referred to Arabs, then I am sure she would have no doubt that those words would be anti-Semitic. Just as she abhors anti-Semitism, it is important that she maintains the same vigorous anti-racist stance against Arabs. It is just unacceptable to use that kind of language. Well, maybe. Or maybe Melanie Phillips, in a comment that certainly could have been worded better and more specifically, was merely talking about a moral vacuum relating to the specific murderers and any Arabs who would celebrate the killing or try to blow some of the blame back Israel's direction. Of course, Great Britain's The Guardian, who quoted Iniat Bungalballah, did not go on in that same article to quote some of the generalizing comments about Israel made in Bungalballah's own blog, comments such as these: the Israeli lobby views any progress made by UK Muslims in this country's political life as being against their interests. The only permissible Muslims are those who are prepared to remain silent about the crimes perpetrated by the apartheid state of Israel. See, Israel's being called an apartheid state. Then he went on to say, David Cameron spoke out against any calls to punish Israel for its continuing occupation. See, Israel is an occupier. Occupation of Palestinians' lands, its illegal Jewish settlements, its cruel and barbaric treatment of the besieged and repeatedly bombed people of Gaza, and its known stockpile of nuclear weapons. He went on to say, Robert Hafun, you are a total and utter coward, much like the members of the murderous Israeli Defense Forces, whereas the IDF like to hide inside their tanks while firing shells at little children. Of course, the IDF does none of this. You hide inside the House of Commons while making your libelous comments. Catching on? According to Iniat Bungalballah, Israel is an apartheid state responsible for cruel and barbaric treatment. He uses the same word against the Jews that he's accusing this other woman of using against the Arabs. Oh, yes. And the IDF, according to him, likes to hide inside their tanks while firing at children. Do I need to tell you all that that is simply not true? These comments, of course, are not to be viewed as bigoted comments against Israel or statements that should be examined for accuracy. Reactions to evil are often expressed with angry verbiage. Unfortunately, Phillips' words seem to have caused more of a reaction than the murder of a Jewish family and their baby. Supposedly, we're to understand the Israeli-Palestinian land disputes as a possible reason for cold-blooded murder, and without condoning the murder, nevertheless remain sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinians.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization.
Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. WisdomWorks Christian Preschool.
So an Israeli family is killed by a Palestinian terrorist, children murdered in their beds, including an infant. And a woman in the UK, a journalist speaking on Israel's behalf, calls it Arab barbarism. She could have chosen her words better, but then she gets more flack than the guy that committed the murder. Flack by Muslims for UK. The fact that Muslims for UK managed to get the Bedfordshire police to call for an investigation into this journalist leaves much to be desired and says something about the climate in Great Britain these days. After all, this is the same country where a good number of schools no longer teach about the Holocaust because it offends their Muslim population, many of whom do not believe the Holocaust ever happened. Future generations will look back and marvel at an era less concerned about evil actions and more concerned about the way evil gets described. Western countries like Great Britain will be studied with raised eyebrows and scratched heads. Note to our dear and sympathetic British cousins, you are no longer Great Britain, just Britain. Aside from the general goal to subvert the entire world to Sharia law, radical Muslims hold a special hatred for Jews, a hatred that predates any present-day Middle East conflict, even though the conflict is being used as an excuse for their anti-Semitism. Unfortunately, this fact-challenged retelling of the Middle East narrative is being accepted amongst people in England and America, two countries that traditionally have supported Israel. So where does this leave us today? Would a two-state solution bring peace to the Middle East? Remember, the Arabs were offered a state in 1947. They turned it down. At that time, they already had a separate Palestinian state, Jordan. And this was not enough, even though it had been carved out from 75% of what had been promised to the Jews. In March of 2000, after years of violating the terms of the Oslo Accords, which occurred in 1993, Yasser Arafat was offered over 90% of the land he wanted. He turned it down also. Why? Because the man never really wanted peace. He would have had no reason to exist anymore if real peace came about. The Palestinian National Covenant was adopted in 1964, once again prior to Israel's so-called illegal occupation of the West Bank. It was revised again in 1968. This document contains 33 articles. Allow me to share just a few of its attractive highlights. Article 2 allows absolutely no arrangement for a Jewish state in the Middle East. Article 20 denies that the Jews have ever had any historical or religious claims to the area. Article 21 rejects all solutions which fall short of the total liberation of Palestine, quote-unquote. Incidentally, such total liberation cannot take place until Israel ceases to exist, according to the Palestinians. Article 15 calls for the elimination of Zionism in Palestine. That means the elimination of Israel, because Zionism is just the belief that Israel is entitled to be a country. That's all Zionism is. The Oswald Accord called for the canceling of any clauses which did not recognize Israel's right to exist, but such clauses were never removed. In 1993, on the same day in which Arafat signed an agreement on the White House lawn, he gave a public discourse to Palestinian Arabs on Jordan TV. This is what he said. Since we cannot defeat Israel in war, we do this in stages. We take any and every territory that we can of Palestine and establish sovereignty there, and we use it as a springboard to take more. When the time comes, we can get the Arab nations to join us for the final blow against Israel. That was Jordanian television, 1993. Yasser Arafat has since passed away. The new Palestinian leader, Mahmoud Abbas, says he wants peace. Now, as I already mentioned, this man awards the families of Palestinian jihadists who kill Israelis. He has also downplayed the amount of Jewish victims in the Holocaust and accused the Zionists of collaborating with the Nazis. Yeah, that was a great collaboration, the Zionists and the Nazis. He says, it seems that the interest of the Zionist movement is to inflate the future so that their gains will be greater. This led them to emphasize this figure, 6 million, in order to gain the solidarity of international public opinion with Zionism. Many scholars have debated the figure of 6 million and reached stunning conclusions, fixing the number of Jewish victims at only a few hundred thousand. And we are supposed to put our hope in this latest peace lover. As I once heard it aptly stated, Abbas is nothing but Arafat in a suit. Today, Israel does not even show up on the maps in Palestinian schools. Kindergarten classes are taught that Jews are devils to be hated and exterminated. I myself had a chance to watch a Palestinian children's TV show with a Sesame Street-like costumed character talking to a cute little five-year-old girl in the audience. "What do you want to do when you grow up, sweetheart?" he said. "I want to kill Jews," the adorable little girl replied. The mascot winked at the audience with a big smile and then turned back to the child. "You do? How many Jews do you want to kill?" "All of them. All of them. Isn't that sweet?" Exactly why would we believe that peace will come to this region if its children are taught that hating Jews is as natural as breathing? When two nations make a peace treaty, they're supposed to be give and take on both sides. Israel's deals, brokered by the United States, always go like this. You give the Palestinians back some land, and here's what they will do. They'll promise to stop killing you. That's the deal. Then one day after the deal, the promise is broken, and missiles are fired into Israel from Gaza, where the Palestinians were finally offered their own autonomous rule, or a suicide bomber kills women and children on a bus. The theme behind this series these last few weeks was a simple one. Israel is not guilty of any illegal occupation. The so-called occupied territories were taken during the Six-Day War in response to a declaration of war from Israel's neighbors. They took this land as a defensive posture to protect themselves from genocide, a genocide promised shamelessly by the Arabs. Even so, most of this was the same territory already promised to them under the Balfour Declaration, not to mention that this land had been their home for several thousand years before the Romans destroyed Jerusalem and changed the name of the land to Palestine. There has never been a country named Palestine or a people named Palestinians. This was a publicity ploy that successfully deceived many under the leader of Yasser Arafat. And Arafat was never interested in a two-state solution. He was interested in the annihilation of Israel. Let me be as straight with my listeners as I possibly can. Nothing Israel does. Nothing Israel does. No gesture, no concession, no discussion will make a hill of beans of difference. They can sign a peace treaty. They can jump on board for a two-state solution. It doesn't matter. Hezbollah wants Israel dead. Al-Qaeda wants Israel dead. ISIS wants Israel dead. Hamas wants Israel dead, but it isn't even limited to the terrorist groups. Palestinian Authority itself wants Israel dead. Many Middle East Muslim nations want Israel dead. The Persian nation of Iran wants Israel dead. My advice to Israel? Just do what you have to do. Do what you need to do. Do what is right. The world will hate you no matter what action you take. And the Arabs will try to kill you no matter how much flowery talk you participate in with our State Department. You may as well just do what's right. My advice to Christians, I hope you have discovered a better reason to side with Israel than theological reasons. Fascinating as prophecy may be, and once again, I am a big believer in Bible prophecy, the issue right now in the Middle East is a human rights issue. Israel is hated not because of any occupation. Israel is hated because her existence feeds the irrational but very real anti-Semitic sentiments pervasive in our world. Israel is also hated for the same reason the United States is hated. We are not a Muslim country. Defending Israel is only the beginning of defending the entire world. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Thank you.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric.
Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? Why does the Bible call premarital sex a sin? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? These are but some of the critical concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob Siegel tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book will be enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but... Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Co-hosting with me today is my wife, Dana, who just took her first trip to Israel, my second trip to Israel. I thought I'd bring her on the show. I know she loved the experience and she wants to tell you all about it.
It was an amazing time. I just felt like I was kind of in a state of awe the whole time. Our trip actually started with a major delay on the front end. And
that's putting it mildly.
Do you want to tell them about that part?
Oh, well, you'd probably say it more pleasantly than I would. But, we were part of a tour group. Dana's brother, my brother-in-law, was in charge of the tour. He's missions pastor at a church in Denver. So we flew to Denver on Monday to fly out with the group of 40 on one plane on Tuesday, Lufthansa Airline. And I got to tell you, as far as Lufthansa Airline goes, their peculiar charm seems to elude me. While we were waiting for our flight, and after they'd even announced boarding, somebody outside was not paying attention to the rolling ladder that they put against the plane. There was suddenly a gust of wind. The ladder rolled into the side of the plane where one of the engines was. Now, I seriously doubt that that could have done much damage to the plane, but they made us wait around for about an hour before telling us they were canceling the flight. I guess they were erring on the side of caution. I'll let you take it from there, Dane, except to say that Moses was kept out of the promised land for hitting a rock with a stick. We were being kept out of the promised land because a ladder hit the engine of the plane.
Yeah, and it was, Bob makes it sound like it was a little breeze. It actually was a pretty significant wind, apparently, because my
niece... somebody left the ladder unattended.
Left it unattended, didn't lock it or whatever.
Somebody should have gotten fired for this.
And my niece actually saw it flying across the tarmac, and it hit and stopped in our plane. And, you know, the handrail that you use to go up these portable staircases is usually straight. Well, this one was bent in a complete semicircle. So it did hit with a significant amount of impact. So anyway, that grounded us. And it took another few days for them to get all 40 of us on 5 different flights to Israel. And we all collected then 3 days later in Israel.
Which means we lost 3 days of the tour.
Yes. And because of that, our wonderful tour company over there worked just, and they even said there were many, many miracles along the way to pull this off. But our whole tour was rearranged. Things were moved around. hotel dates changed and so on for 40 plus people. And we were still able to see 90% of what we had planned to see in the first place. We missed very little.
And it was so packed. By the time the trip was over, we really didn't feel that we were on less of a trip.
No, not at all. And we just saw so many things. It was amazing. The other kind of fun thing that was going on there was they were having extreme heat waves, record-breaking heat waves. On Tuesday, the headline in the Jerusalem Post that was delivered to our hotel door says, "Is it hot enough for you?" More than 100 sent to the hospital as this heat season's first heat wave breaks record temperatures. And they were also having issues with enough electricity. So it was pretty astonishing. Our bus driver kept telling us the temperatures in Celsius. So it doesn't sound as bad in Celsius, but then when he translated it, our hottest day was 116. Yeah,
fortunately, our bus was air conditioned.
Yes. So we set off on this tour. It was amazing. Our first day, we went up to Caesarea and got to see the outdoor amphitheater that's right there on the coast, the whole city that was built there.
Built there by the Romans when they were occupying Israel.
Yes. And there's still so much of the original pillars and columns and parts of statues and so on. And you can just see that in its day, it must have just been an unbelievable setup. The Roman aqueduct also came in there. So we actually got to see portions of that. The Romans were quite ahead of their time in many of the things they were able to accomplish, bringing fresh water to this seaport here on the Mediterranean. We moved then on to overlooking Nazareth and the Valley of Armageddon from Mount Precipice.
As in the great battle of Armageddon, the prophecy says will be the final battle of the world.
And I kept standing there next to Bob saying, is this really the place where it says in the Bible that it's going to happen? He said,
this is it, baby. You bet.
Which is just, that's such a surreal feeling to be standing there and knowing that this is the location the Bible is talking about.
And the prophecy is that all the nations of the world will gather against Israel. Now, when you look at the headlines about Israel today, you just can't imagine that prophecy ever being fulfilled, can you? Okay, we'll be right back. Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. It's good to be back with you this week. Dana and I had a great time in Israel, and she's joining us today to tell you all about it.
Probably one of the most significant things on our first day, although there were many, was getting to see the Sea of Galilee, the place where Jesus walked on water and spent a good portion of his ministry time on those seas. And while we were there, we got to see a ship, or a more like a boat.
A boat
would be.
But it did.
Even,
it did date from 2,000 years ago.
It did, and just we got to see how they were able to raise that, and the science that went into preserving it, so that it can stay there for people to see for, you know,
so
many years.
So it was a boat from Jesus' time. It could have been one of the very boats that Jesus and his disciples had been on.
Yeah, and you realize it's not very big. And that they were using these boats to fish and traverse the Sea of Galilee, and could very well have been the very kind of boat that Jesus might have been in, asleep when the passengers on that boat got very concerned about the storm.
And it had an undercover area. It said that in the Bible that Jesus was below sleeping. There was an undercover area. So you realize, okay, it didn't have to be a luxury liner for them to have the kind of boats where somebody could sleep underneath.
Right. And I always thought that was like a double deck boat, but it's not. It was mostly just that, there were covered parts in the front and the back of the boat. And that's where he was apparently under, just napping while the rest of the world was in a storm. One of the special things that changed on our trip, as we said, there were many, many things that changed and miracles that occurred. And one of them was that our tour guide was able to change from just seeing the boat from Jesus's time to a fisherman's lunch on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. Yes, they actually served fish during that lunchtime. And you could get the fish with bones and eye and tail and everything if you wanted to.
Remind me to say something about Mediterranean food before this is over.
Okay. Bob's favorite.
I love the trip. Yes. Did I love the food? No.
That's because it's vegetable based and he's not excited about that. But anyway, back to the Sea of Galilee. One of the things that got to change, our tour guide was able to arrange a boat ride from one side of the Sea of Galilee across to the other side. And then our bus driver met us on the other side and took us to the kibbutz that where we stayed, which is in all intents and purposes, it's like a resort here in the United States. And getting to sail across the Sea of Galilee was just amazing. I think we were all kind of just in awe. The whole group was just amazed at being there. Halfway through, captain stopped the boat, cut all the engines, and we just floated and could hear the waves lapping against the side of the boat. And we sang hymns, and it was just incredible to be in the place where Jesus sailed and spoke and spent a good portion of his life. So that was a pretty cool day. We watched the sunset over the Sea of Galilee, and then the next day we spent the whole day going around the Sea of Galilee, seeing Capernaum, which is how our
Capernaum.
Yes, which is we had a wonderful tour guide. Daniel was amazing, and he took us all around the different really critical places around the Sea of Galilee, and especially in Capernaum, where Jesus based his ministry for 3 years. We got to see the original synagogue, portions of it. Of course, it's not all standing beautifully like it was in that time. They've restored portions of it. They do have a lot of the tops of the columns and pieces and artifacts from then, and possibly even Peter's house.
And one of the reasons they like to show you this now is that there is this lie that the Jews have no historical claim to the land. And we're actually looking at ancient Jewish synagogues. So that's pretty significant.
Very significant. So being around the Sea of Galilee was amazing. And that day, as we were traveling and finishing our tour, circling the Sea of Galilee, of course, the Jordan River feeds the Sea of Galilee and exits the Sea of Galilee toward the Dead Sea.
And who got baptized in the Jordan River?
A whole bunch of us. It was very, very cool. And I have been baptized before, and that was a very important, significant baptism for me when I was in my early 20s. But I thought, gosh, you know, when will I be in Israel again? So I counted this as just a very special moment for me to be able to be baptized in the Jordan, even though I count my other baptism as the one where I really dedicated myself to God. And So this was a rededication. Many of the people that were there did that. Almost our entire group was baptized by Bob and my brother, both pastors that were on the tour.
So that was quite really an special experience for me, baptizing people in the Jordan River, baptizing my wife in the Jordan River. I didn't experience that the last time I went to Israel.
No. And one of the trippy things about it is I don't even know what they looked like. I didn't want to see. The water's
the little
a little murky.
Fish floating around our feet while we're baptizing.
They're like nibbling on your ankles, and you're trying not to freak out, and you're trying to really have reverence for the moment. But the little fish were kind of distracting.
Yeah, you don't see these in the baptistry at the First Baptist Church.
No.
It's a little different.
No, but it really was special to be thinking that this was the Jordan River. Such an important place. We went on from there to Jerusalem, and then we spent the rest of our time basing from Jerusalem and going all around, from the old city to the original layout of how the city was in Jesus's day, and just lots of great things. Our first day, we walked into the old city through the Muslim gate, and the old city is divided up into four quarters. They have the Muslim quarter, the Armenian quarter, the Christian quarter, and the Jewish quarter. And we were, by the end of our days, able to walk through all these different quarters. And it was just fascinating to see all those things. The reason you have to walk through all of them is because all of the really important landmarks are all throughout the old city. They don't pertain to just one place or another. They're all over the city, so you're having to move around. I think what was a really special day was the day that our tour, the tour company, really neat Christian lady, she insisted that we take that day's tour following the steps that Jesus would have followed coming in.
So we started on the Mount of Olives, then descended into Jerusalem through the gate.
Exactly. And we walked down the path that Jesus would have taken on Palm Sunday and the road that he would have entered. And as you're walking down, you're just thinking, oh my gosh, could this really have been the road that Jesus rode in on the donkey and he was first celebrated as he was coming in? And we'll share more about that and what we were walking through as we were coming down this road.
We know Dana and I usually take vacation to Disneyland. We went to Israel this time just to prove to you that we do know how to travel to other places.
Yes, we do.
Buying a home? Selling a home? It goes without saying that you need somebody experienced and skilled, but you also need a realtor you can trust, a man who will look out for your interests as if they were his own. This is Bob Siegel, here to steer you the right direction with just two words, Fred Valduti. Fred works with Realty Executives All Area, a company that has sold thousands of homes locally since 1994. Putting your home up for sale or selling a home can be stressful, filled with decisions you never anticipated. So put your mind at ease and call Fred Falduti. He sold my home for me at top price. Every step along the way, I benefited from his wisdom and a very generous usage of his time. By the way, Fred Falduti received the Executive of the Year Award for 2014. What? You say that was a couple of years ago? Listen, wise guy, do you want to mark the calendar or do you want somebody to sell your home for you? Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Falduti with Realty Executives All Area, 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfalduti.com.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians?
Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. That's kind of funny to have that song bring us back in. I'm pretty sure that isn't the kind of song that was playing Jesus in, but it's kind of funny.
You don't think the Israelis marched to the Magnificent Seven?
I don't think so, but it was a triumphant ride in. So,
well, they did ride on horses. That's as close as it'll get.
So we start at the Mount of Olives overlooking the whole valley and across to the Old City, and just, it was amazing to see that view and then to walk down this road that perhaps Jesus might have entered the city in, and we could see the gates where he would come in. What's so interesting is the whole site of that mountain is all Jewish graves. It's just covered. It's amazing to see how many of them are there. And then on the far side, right outside the gates where Jesus is supposed to return, the Muslims have sealed up that gate, completely filled it in with stone.
Put their graves.
And they have put all of their graves around the outside of that part
to
desecrate
it. Because they believe the Messiah can't come if he has to go through graves.
Yeah, so
I have a feeling it's not going to be a problem for Jesus.
I'm pretty sure he's going to be able to get through that gate no matter
just
what.
Fine.
But it was very interesting seeing all of that. So we walked down this path. We walked down to the Garden of Gethsemane. We saw perhaps there was one garden area where the olive trees are possibly have been there. Parts of it, they talk about how olive trees get cut down to the ground and then they regrow again out of the stump. So perhaps there were just some huge, gnarly olive trees that perhaps were there in the time of Jesus, but we don't know for sure. And then they took us over to a very private garden. You can only go in with a tour time. And we were able to enter that and have a bit of a service in there and sing. And really, Bob taught us so much about Jesus and what he did here. It's interesting in these times when we were talking about Christian aspects of Israel, our tour guide would fade away. He was a Jewish man. And he would fade away. We wouldn't see him anytime during that. And Bob was teaching us so many things. But to be sitting there where Jesus asked his disciples, his very close disciples, to stay awake and pray, they did not. And he was just in agony as he knew what was coming to him. So we were in the Garden of Gethsemane, had a service there. And then we continued to follow his path, going to the house of Caiaphas, where he would have been put on a first trial, where the soldiers came and got him from the Garden of Gethsemane. We were taken over across, back across the city. And this sounds like we're moving lots of places, but in reality, it's fairly close in the city. You can see all of it from where you are. The tricky part for us is moving through the traffic to get to these places. But we went to the house of Caiaphas, saw the scourging floor, just where they kept prisoners down below. It just was very sobering. And then continued on to the Via Dolorosa, which is the, they call it the 14 Stations of the Cross, which I never understood what that was. Now I get what that is. And it's just the pathway they think Jesus might have taken. There's nothing for sure there, but the different places that he might have gone through the cities he toured.
And some of these places, even if it's not the exact spot, you know you're at least very close to where the exact spot is. And when you're done walking the area, you did walk where Jesus walked.
Yeah, and where he carried the cross.
And
then when Simon of Cyrene took over the cross and
right.
So on. So you're following these hallways and pathways through the current marketplaces, but you're going from place to place. And there's markers all along the way that tell you this is the next location of a possible interaction with Jesus. We ended up in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where many people there. There are six different religions that share that church and maintain it, from Greek Orthodox to Catholic to Franciscans that take care of it. Gosh, I can't even remember what all the other religions
and they
that
believe
were there.
That that's the site of both the crucifixion and the resurrection.
Which,
but there's an alternative site that we went to afterwards, which we thought was a lot more accurate.
Yes, because all of this supposedly happened within this space, which just doesn't make, when you see the whole thing, you're thinking this doesn't make sense from what the Bible says. But, you know, we don't know for sure. But where we were taken after that was the garden tomb.
The different garden. Now, this is not the Garden of Gethsemane.
This is a cross. Yes. And
a first century tomb that could have been the actual tomb Jesus had been in. But if not, it was one just exactly like it.
And the location is much more consistent with what the Bible said. And we found
out. And I checked it out. It's still empty. He's still risen.
He's still not there. And we saw the, you know, when they say that they took him to Golgotha, which means skull, we were actually able to see in the side of the mountain.
Yeah, there's a mountain there that looks like a skull. Just call me a romantic. I think that's the actual site of the resurrection.
Yeah.
They said they crucified in a place called a skull. There's a place where it looks like a skull, and it's looked that way for the last 2,000 years.
And we're on a viewing platform, and we could see it, again, right in the middle of the city. So the city bus yard is right below us with buses coming and going and honking, and we're trying to have this, wow, maybe this is a place where Christ was crucified. It was a very interesting.
Yeah, and everybody knows that the buses in Jesus' day didn't honk quite as loud as that.
But to be in that garden, we were able to take communion in that garden, which was a very special. The organization that cares for that place does such a lovely job of hosting groups that are there to really ponder the fact that Jesus perhaps died in this place, was carried a short distance, put in a tomb there, guarded and so on. And it really is, it's a very special place to be. So that was amazing. That day was long, but very interesting to have followed the path that Jesus took on that last day. It was pretty, again, the word I keep thinking of is sobering. It's just amazing. Our last day, we were able to go to Masada, which is the hillside. It's really on a mountain. It's not a hillside. The fortress that Herod built, one of his many palaces and fortresses.
And then used for the last stand of the Jews against the Romans after Jerusalem had been destroyed.
And what was so amazing about that last stand, that instead of being conquered by the Romans and being taken into slavery again, they decided that they would just massively kill themselves so that they would not be there and be able to be used by the Romans. And so when the Roman soldiers finally broke through 2 years later, took them 2 years to get up to the top of this mountain and infiltrate the fortress, they found all of the people dead. Now, the reason they know about this is because two women were able to escape. They don't know how, but two women were able to escape, connected with Josephus, who was a very famous historian of the time, and he recorded everything that they said. So we even have the last conversation that their leader shared with them about, should we not ponder this rather than being slaves? Would it not be more honorable to not be here when they arrive? So it was just a really amazing place. And we ended with swimming in the Dead Sea and then heading back to our hotel for a long flight home.
And this music does sound more biblical. It's also our weekly theme music, the music Exodus. Well, Dana, we could probably do another whole show on this, but
it was amazing.
It was just a fantastic. If you have not had a chance to go to Israel, everybody that's gone there has just absolutely loved it. We will see you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.